What is up, Mets fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Mets the Podcast. Big one for the boys. Episode number 250. 250 episodes. A lot to talk about here. Shohei Ohtani is a Los Angeles Dodger. Juan Soto is a New York Yankee. I know that has nothing to do with the Mets, but it's going to help set up the conversation because the offseason, I think, has now officially started with those guys off the board. We'll be able to seriously now consider who the Mets can bring in, who are some big pieces that could be a part of this team for the 2024 season, as well as just everything else going on in baseball. You guys know the drill at this point. If you're listening to us, make sure you follow us on our social media at MetsUp on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. If you want to watch us, YouTube, go to the New York Mets YouTube channel and subscribe over there. And if you're listening, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Odyssey, drop us a rating, drop us a review, download and subscribe. James, big 250. How are we feeling?
250 is great. This is also Messed Up International. Back with you guys for another episode since the summer. I'm on a nice little Euro trip right now. I'm in Lisbon, then I'm going to London. It's an alliteration vacation. So yeah, that's why if you're watching on YouTube, you see me in some weird like Baroque red and black cabinets. This kitchen had amazing lighting. So I'm doing this in the kitchen right now. So shout out this Airbnb. It's a really good one.
One thing that I've noticed in my time going to Europe a couple different times is they're obsessed, and if you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see this, with the cabinets in the kitchen that open upwards. It doesn't make any sense. It feels so, like such bad design. Can you even open those two cabinets at the same time? I don't think you can. The one behind you?
Based on my, like that my, one and the one to the next. Based on my wiring right now, I'm not going to try, but I think you could.
It looks like they're going to hit.
It's kind of like how like all the really fancy cars have the up and down doors where it's like, who in the world wants that?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Not a fan of it. But regardless, glad to have you here, even from Portugal.
Great place overall. But as has all been happening, like as I've left for this trip, like the big news of baseball, sports in general, like everything kind of stopped over the weekend when Shohei Ohtani signs his deal. And it's just like, we just have to talk about it because of what it means for everything in baseball, everything almost in sports. And I'm almost happy that the timing of this podcast came so we could talk about it now that we know everything about it, rather than if we would have just done it right after it happened, you know, because I think it's changed a lot since then. So it came out on Saturday, 10 for 700. And that was like the money. And everyone was freaking out, like just conceptualizing $700 million. I think is kind of insane. Like, I don't even know what to think about that. It's worth more than like, he was apparently at that time going to make more annually than like, I think 10 different teams, like all the low market teams, more than most NHL franchises, more guaranteed money in that deal than like most other sports. I think every other sport combined for a period of time. No, not every sport. I think maybe just each individual sport individually, but not combined, something like that. But all that shock value, everyone went crazy. And then, I don't know, it felt like that deal was going to be a lot. And now what's come out in the last couple of days with deferrals, I think changes what it looks like a little bit.
I mean, like, yes and no. Like, at the end of the day, like, is it truthfully 10 for 700 million? Yes. Technically, it is. Like at the end of the day, Shohei Ohtani is going to be receiving $700 million from the Los Angeles Dodgers. But we now know that with the deferrals, it's going to be $2 million a year, which is insane. $2 million a year for the next 10 years. So to play, he's going to receive $20 million over the next 10 years from the Dodgers. Shohei Ohtani is able to do this because his off-the-field endorsements and sponsorships are out of control, obviously, one of the biggest stars on the entire planet, and he makes $50 million a year simply from off-the-field stuff. So that's why he was able to take the pay cut, per se, and only take $2 million, along with the fact that he and the Dodgers both want to still be able to build more around this team, which sounds absolutely crazy out loud to say. They want to build more around Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and Will Smith, but they want to be able to spend more without having as much as a huge tax penalty that would be occurring if you were paying him $70 million and $68 million a year for 10 years after the contract is over. So yeah, it's real. It is 10 for 700 million. It's just a little bit different. Everyone's freaking out about what the true value of this contract is, because everyone's trying to be a nerd and get all the clicks that they possibly can on Twitter and stuff, figuring out the numbers. But I don't know. I don't really care. Still 10 for $700 million. They also are still getting hit for more than $2 million a year, though, right? I believe on the tax.
Totally. And I like all the nerding out of it. Like, there was a great article by Mark's favorite baseball media member, John Becker, on Fangraphs about it. There was a great one by Lindsay Adler on Wall Street Journal. It was a great one by, I think his name is Jordan Blum, a financial writer for the AP. and it was all about like all the nitty gritty of like all the tax stuff, all the deferrals. There were terms being thrown around like imputed loan interest rate, the ILIR for those interested in government economy, the real money value of the deal. People are talking about taxes and inflation, debt leverage because of how much money the Dodgers are going to owe Otani in 10 years and what that actually means in terms of value of the franchise and how something like that could wind up being negotiated. I saw Jeffrey Pastrnak from Baseball Perspectives talking about that. Super interesting. But at the end of the day, he is still hitting the Dodgers tax for $46 million a season, which is still the highest in baseball. It broke past the two barriers that we set the Mets with Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander, which are about $43, $42 million a year. So as much as the $2 million figure is being thrown around, it's not really real. Like, that's his adjusted salary, but he's still counting against their tax for $46 million. I think that's why this is something that is not like people were screaming this should be like vetoed by the league, but every single CBA like has clauses that are like, you can defer whatever you want, like interest, no interest, you could defer it. And the players union was like, yeah, he's $700 million. So like, yeah, we're still going to let him sign that. But it's funny, on the Dodgers MLB roster right now, then some of these are arbitration, some of these are contracts projected by Spotrac, but there are only four players in MLB contracts who are projected to have a lower adjusted salary than Shohei Ohtani. And that's Yency Almonte, legend, Blake Trinan, JP Fierreisen, and Alex Vesia.
Made that Blake Trinan, you give it a little twang to it, Trinan.
Yeah, I like a little twang. I'm in Europe. I'm in Portugal. I've lots of twangs around.
That was a Portuguese Trinan right there.
Portuguese is a crazy language. I can't even like understand half the things people are saying. Like, it's because it's like it's around Spanish, but it's not Spanish. I understand Spanish pretty well, but I'm just like, what? It's like a lot of joes and jows and g's.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I feel like a lot of the words just feel like they're like mushed together, which maybe is a little ignorant, but also at the same time, like that's what it sounds like.
I don't think any language on earth uses more x's.
X's per
leather, total leather. I think it's off the charts, but this is fascinating. Again, like Mark's chastising all the nerdiness. I love the nerdiness. Like, look up those articles I was talking about because they're interesting. It's super interesting. And it's also, I think it's interesting in the baseball sense because like when he signed these deals, it kind of felt like they smushed the Gerrit Cole and Aaron Judge contracts together and then threw $50 million on top, which I was like, wow. So they do think he might be still like the best pitcher and the best hitter in the league. I think now like the real value of it comes down to more like 10 for $460 million based on like the real money-ish when you count for like inflation, all the changing stuff and the tax, the way it's affecting the actual tax, what they're actually going to pay him for what their roster means year to year. I think that makes more sense and was more like what kind of people expected.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, to that regard about how much it, like, whether or not this affects, like, what you think of him as a pitcher, per se. We'll have to see when he comes back from Tommy John surgery after this upcoming season. Also interesting to note, if he is not going to pitch, or maybe he's not as effective at pitching, do they try him back in the outfield? Because you're probably not just paying a DH $46 million, theoretically, a year.
I think probably, and there's no reason that he can't be literally one of the best outfielders in the entire league. Like, you could even put him in center field. Like, the Dodgers probably did this years ago with Cody Bellinger, and he became one of the best center fielders in baseball. And it was different because Bellinger was like 23 and Otani's going to be approaching 30. But like, he's lightning fast. He has an amazing arm. Like, I think every instinct he has in the baseball field is amazing. Like, maybe or maybe he just becomes like part-time DH, part-time outfielder, and like part-time relief, high leverage relief pitcher. Like, you could find ways to like get to where like, oh, this is definitely worth $46 million against our tax like that. But it's really interesting. And from a baseball perspective, like, it's the whole thing is just completely fascinating top to bottom. The fact that he was so upfront, basically, that he kind of only seemed like he wanted to play for the Dodgers. The craziness with the Blue Jays thing at the end of the time. It's been reported that there just wasn't really that much serious interest from other teams because he seemed like he was never going to leave Southern California.
Have you heard the conspiracy theory?
Yeah, some great ones.
About Robert Herjavec being part of the same agency that Shohei had, and this was all a plan. I mean, if that is the case, it's one of the greatest heists in sports history right here.
Whatever it is, we probably will never know like what fully happened on that fateful day when Yusei Kikuchi rented out a sushi restaurant in Toronto. And the Blue Jays might have even thought they had him. Like, they might not have been lying. But what we have to take from this now as Mets fans and as people who are just ready for the rest of the offseason to begin, because it's been stagnant at the top by, as Mark said, Shohei and Juan Soto, who is now a Yankee. I don't really want to give that much more of the time of day besides that Mark and I have very differing opinions on the trade. But bottom line is, like, the Yankees got one of the best players in baseball for a bunch of depth, whatever. Well, this whole thing is unprecedented. And the bottom line is, right now, the Dodgers have a $217 million tax payroll. And that's still $17 million short of where the first penalty is for the CBT. So they have a lot of room to make a big impact. And do you know the Dodgers' projected rotation right now?
It's not great. It's Bobby Miller, Tony Gonsolin.
maybe kind of still come back from injury. Walker Buehler also coming off a second Tommy John. Ryan Pepiot,
Emmett Sheehan,
and Ryan Yarbrough. So,
ooh.
Yes, and now they have a lot of money to possibly make a splash. Why are we talking about that? Because as we transition now, talking about the rest of the offseason, now that Soto's off the board, now that Otani's off the board, everything is now all eyes, all spotlights on Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who's been taking meetings reportedly all week, who's been back and forth between Japan and the United States. Still a lot of teams vying for his services. A lot of teams been connected to him. This just seems like the thing that's now going to be like, this is the last piece of like molasses that's slowing down the offseason. And once this frees up, everything I feel like is going to trickle out from it. But I feel like everyone's still totally on Yamamoto watch now for the next week or so.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, there's obviously been a bunch of different rumors and stuff going around about who's interested, who's not. I think you just take it as probably everybody in baseball that can afford to pay him this much money is going to be interested in him. I think the Shohei Ohtani deal definitely puts the Dodgers way more in play than we thought they were originally, especially when Ohtani and the Dodgers are talking about it's they're doing this contract so they can spend more and improve upon the team where they need the most help. Pitching, which just like the Mets, we also need help on the pitching side. The Yankees are going to be interested. Like all the big spenders are going to be there. It's going to come down to where he wants to go. Simply as that. I think he's probably going to get the most money from those three teams right there. They'll probably offer him the biggest contracts, maybe the Giants as well or the Red Sox. And it's going to be what team does he want to play for? Mets, Dodgers, and Red Sox will have Japanese players on there. We know that Yamamoto said he would be very open to playing with Japanese players. Yankees and Giants do not, which seem like the other two favorites right now in like the top five. It's weird. It's weird, especially because when the news is coming mostly from Japan, like I know from my Japanese friend, that the news that they report over there and the news that we get over here sometimes is very different. It's a little more private, but more in depth, like on the Japanese side, where over here it's a little more tabloidy and just trying to grab headlines and names.
Yeah, I think, I mean, part of what you're saying also, there was, from a side note, we're just mentioning, you know, Kodai Senga had a great interview on, I think he pronounced it, Yaku Cosmopolitan, a thread I sent you on
Yaku,
Twitter.
Yeah.
Just a great interview, a great thread. You can't really watch it because it's in Japanese, but someone transcribed it, this Twitter account, who's very good for Japanese news consistently. Amazing listening to him talk about like spending the year, like getting used to pitching in America, being in America, being in New York, being on the road. Just talked about a lot of things I feel like we've discussed in this podcast that a lot of people don't realize some of these Japanese players that come over deal with. And one of the big things is the ball is different. They still use a pre-tacked ball in the MPB. And in America, we do not. Kodai mentioned how that was tough for him for his control early. And I've been reading, there was a great article that Eno Saris put out today in The Athletic about like scouting Yamamoto and like using pitch grades and pitch movement, release height, like velocity, every single thing to try and like give him Major League Baseball comps. And something that's interesting about Japanese pitching, too, is that I think Shohei also, not Shohei, Japanese pitchers in the mind, that Kodai also talked about is that they almost always pitch in controlled environments in domes. And he really, really had to get used to, he said, pitching in humidity, which is something that like, and pitching in dry weather, pitching in wet weather, like the seasons change, the months change. And we saw that Kodai, it took him a few months to really get his feet under him. And then he was basically unstoppable. But a lot of stuff there, Yamamoto, though. And I still think that it's worth having a conversation about who he is and what he can be in the league, because by all accounts, and again, if anyone doesn't have subscription to The Athletic, you should get one. Read this article by Eno Saris. He's Pitching Whisperer, one of my inspirations in baseball analysis. One of the first people I read and was like, oh, this is a really cool thing. I really want to be able to do this a lot. The stuff is amazing. We've talked about that a few times this podcast. He sat 96, 97 WBC, but he didn't have an outing that spanned more than 55 pitches. So you have to kind of push that down. It'll probably sit between 94 and 96, which is still amazing. Very similar physics to Kodai Senga's fastball, where there's more run than ride as like a two-seamer, but it still comes in so hard, and the command of it is still so good that it's definitely expected to be a plus pitch. And then the devastating curveball and splitter that could be two of the best off-speed pitches breaking balls in the whole league. And like just that right there is like, this is probably going to be one of the best pitchers in baseball, potential ace the second he walks in. And that's why all these teams are lining up to give him. Rumors are coming out right now, $200, even $300 million, one of the highest contracts has ever been given for a pitcher, for a player in the history of baseball, which seems crazy. But Ben Cherington had a quote in this article that he gave to Eno. And I think Ben Cherington's a really useful piece of this, not because the Pirates are anywhere involved in these negotiations, but because he was part of the front office with the Red Sox like 10 years ago now, 12 years ago now, that gave Daisuke Matsuzaka one of the first contracts of this time. And he said then it was like, we had all statistics, but we knew we couldn't really take those seriously because people in the MPB, they don't strike out, they don't hit home runs. Very different than Major League Baseball. Yeah. So then what we had to do is like, we had to scout pitches. We had to like look at pitches, use radar guns over there. And like, you still get that, but they didn't have any kind of data like we have now when we look at pitches. And he said, now you don't really have to be that scared about it because we have so much per pitch data. Like we have pitch grade evaluation and we know every single thing about all these pitches now. So it's much less of like a mystery shrouded in secrecy. Like Daisuke Matsuzaka with his gyro ball. And like they were doing interviews with like all these people in his life trying to do a character analysis, where now it's just a totally different ball game with acquiring someone from overseas.
Yeah. And Yamamoto is also doing something like I've been a little bit of a devil's advocate. I still think like the stuff is great. I'm not going to pretend like it's not. I'm not like Yoshinobu Yamamoto would love him on the Mets, would take him any day of the week. Being devil's advocate, just like interesting things about him. Cause like you said, we now have all this information. We can kind of backtrack a little bit too now to compare what Yamamoto looks like towards other major league pitchers. And for a guy who is a little bit smaller in size, he's 5'10", like 165, 170 pounds. Let's push it out to 5'10", 180. There has never really been a pitcher in the last like 30, 40 years that had similar size to him that has had a long stretch of success. You have Marcus Stroman. That's pretty much the most successful one. You're looking at like a Mike Leake who had a great major league career, but was never one of the best pitchers. They don't have the stuff though that Yamamoto has. Like that's quantifiable. You can see they're not the same. If you go back in the history of baseball, Whitey Ford is probably like the best guy who fits those parameters or less that has been successful. But then you just bump it up like one inch and you got Pedro Martinez. You have Tim Lincecum. Like you have a lot similar pitchers who have similar stuff as well.
You have Roy Oswalt too. I think he's someone that slept on. And you even have Sonny Gray, who he's someone who struggled with durability, but we saw him just get another look at the contract this offseason. We just saw him have another amazing season this past year for the Twins. And there are definitely ways to be successful when you're this size. No one's saying that at all, but it's just, I think the question then becomes not how successful, because there's no doubt that for, especially in his prime, like this is also unprecedented because we don't usually see pitchers sign contracts at 25 years of age. There was one guy who was going to do that and he tragically passed away in something that I'll still like never get over, in Jose Fernandez. So this is totally unprecedented for how old he is, how hard he throws, and when he's hitting free agency. Like if Pedro Martinez was 25 years old with his stats, he would have broken every single record free agency ever. Like it wasn't
of course, close. especially in these times too.
Right, if Jose Fernandez would have reached free agency, he would have made hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, there's no question about that. So that's why it's hard to have this conversation where there's no precedent for this at all. There's absolutely no context whatsoever. And another interesting tidbit that Eno had in this article on The Athletic is that the shortest pitcher ever to sign a contract that was guaranteed $175 million is Zach Greinke, and he's 6'2". He has 4, if not 5 inches on Yamamoto, which is interesting, but it doesn't really mean, again, Yamamoto's not going to be good, because I think by all accounts, like his fastball,
stuff is good.
His splitter, and his curveball are all going to be top-notch pitches in the entire league. So he's coming over with an extra pitch on what Kodai Senga came with, and no one could touch him. And Kodai had the ghost fork, and that was amazing. Kodai also, in that interview, talked about how welcomed he felt by people merchandising the ghost fork. He says, so shout out to you guys Mets fans. We put a bunch of people on Instagram and Twitter stuff this season, but people like doing ghost fork things in the stands really like brought his spirits up. So we got to do more of that next year. That's for all Mets fans out there. But Yamamoto didn't have that one amazing pitch, but he has two different ones. And the two pitches also move up and down, and they also move a lot. No splitter in the major league is being thrown 90 miles an hour with 30 inches of drop. It's not. It's unprecedented. And like the fact
not
that-
Not even Juan Duran?
No. Hmm. Apparently, that's what you know said in this article. It's all coming straight from the article right here. And that's like something, and the fact that both those pitches, the curveball and the splitter, are also up and down pitches that we're not worried about lefty-righty thing. We talked about Shoto.
Yeah.
Say the last name for me again.
Imanaga.
Shoto Imanaga, about how as a lefty, he throws pitches that go inward to righties. He might need another weapon to really like reach the next level as a pitcher. Similar to how Kodai found that cutter as his next weapon to give the third pitch, give a little more texture to his repertoire, and then he completely took off. Yamamoto doesn't really have that issue. Like, there's no doubt that he's going to be an ace when he steps on the rubber, I think. I think personally. The question is that when you get 5, 6 years down the line, how the body holds up. And there's no way to know that, because maybe he's more likely to get hurt because he is smaller, but also he hasn't gotten hurt yet in Japan. He had one stint on their injured list with an oblique injury in 2019, 4 years ago. He's been a clean bill of health since. So while size is a good indicator of injury, especially for a pitcher, there's no better indicator than past injury. Since someone just not being injury prone. And I think that all of this comes together. And again, like he's a total unicorn in terms of what he is as a free agent case. And it's interesting because even as all this was happening and all the news on Yamamoto, all the news was on Shohei Ohtani, Roki Sasaki, the other young Japanese flamethrowing phenom, just tried to get posted. He was like, just let me out of here. Like, I want to be a part of all this fun too. And that would be more similar to Ohtani, where he'd be signing a contract still as like someone who hasn't fulfilled, I don't know exact terminology, but he still hasn't fulfilled his MPB requirements to actually be posted.
It's like service time.
Yeah, service time. So he'd be coming over an amateur deal similar to Ohtani, where they have to make the minimum and then go through arbitration. which this even makes this Ohtani deal crazier. He wasn't even making real money for most of his major league career, but digress. So it's just, it's so funny right now, like what has happened. I think a big reason why there's so much interest right now, especially the MPB, which I think is pound for pound the best international league, probably better than the KBO, 100%. I'd say.
Yeah.
We know so much more. It's not like shrouded like in craziness like it used to be. Like it's not like, they can't trust a guy if he's never thrown a pitch. We have so much data on his pitches. We can compare them very specifically to major league pitches. Like, compared his fastball to Kevin Gausman and to Kodai Senga between release height and shape. He compared the splitter to Gausman, but also was like, it's just better than Gausman's. Like, this might be the best splitter in baseball, like, depending on how he frames it. The curveball, he said, was really similar to Chris Bassett. We watched Chris Bassett's curveball for a whole year. Curveball's disgusting. It's an amazing curveball. Nice and big loop, slow. And Chris Bassett was doing that with a 91-mile-an-hour fastball. Yeah. Yamamoto's going to do a 96-mile-an-hour fastball just to compare like the difference there. 65 inches of drop. That's incredible. But
it's so much.
It's so much. But like that's where we are now in the offseason, where like there's a domino, and here's the next domino. And I think when this domino falls, a lot of dominoes are going to fall after it, which we're going to talk to you guys about right now, because there's so much that hasn't happened yet in this free agency. Like, even the last week since you heard from us, like, Eduardo Rodriguez, basically the only free agent that signed a contract, and then Tyler O'Neill was traded. Like, that's it. Like, this.
I mean, Jamer Candelario went to the Reds. And then what else? I think there was one more, but, like, nothing particularly big, like, in terms of the big-name guys that were on the board. They're still very much around. We knew this. We knew this was going to happen. We knew it was going to wait for – everyone was going to wait for Ohtani, especially on the pitching side, even though, obviously, like, he's not necessarily a pitcher, but you still wait. You're still waiting for Ohtani. You're still waiting for Yamamoto to go. That's why a guy like Snell probably hasn't signed yet, or some of the other pitchers like Montgomery. It's interesting. This free agent class is super dense in the middle. Like, there's a lot of like middle of the guys, and we've talked about this before on the podcast. The top end talent is dwindling down a little bit now as some of the bigger names are moving, but there are still ways for this team to improve. And of course, with the news of Ronnie Mauricio tearing his ACL in the Dominican Winter League, which is just like
awful.
So brutal, because he is one of the bright young players on this team. While he didn't have the craziest of numbers last year, I mean, the guy hit a ball 117 miles an hour that we saw in person and literally looked at each other and went like, oh my God. Like, we said a couple expletives, I think. Not oh my God, a couple maybe holier than thou, expletives or whatnot. But it was like, he is super, super impressive at what he can do. Saw him in the Dominican Winter League already doing some crazy stuff. I tweeted out a clip. I'm like, this guy's got to play every day somehow. Like, he's electric. So for him to get hurt, tear his ACL, is tough, because probably at the best he's back like maybe September. It's probably just going to be the whole season if you had to guess in terms of what is going on. Sucks, and it makes you think, like, what are we going to now do at third base? Because it seemed like there was probably going to be a platoon of sorts between him and Brett Beatty.
Not even just a platoon of sorts, but I was really excited to see healthy competition between him, Brett Beatty, and Mark Vientos. And it was exciting to hear David Stearns talk about that, like, as we've gone through his offseason. And just comparing them to other options that were on the market didn't really seem like it was worth the opportunity cost for a couple guys who still...
Breaking news.
Yes?
On the podcast, breaking news. Seth Lugo, 3-year, $45 million contract to the Royals. So he will not be coming back to the Mets, it seems like.
The Royals?
Yeah, the Royals. Sorry to interrupt there, but I feel like it's topical with the Mets needing starting pitching.
Yes, meaningful. It's another guy off the board. Lugo probably did have like a good mix of ceiling and floor for any guy still on the board. Also, in the article from, he compared Yamamoto's curveball to Lugo's. We know how good Lugo's curveball was over the years in terms of release point and drop and velocity. Nevertheless, it was going to be an exciting competition, because even like as great as Mauricio is being viewed right now across the league, and like how, especially by specifically Mets fans, he's still last year in a 26-game sample, an on-base percentage under 300, 20% worse than league average. So, like, the physical tools are still totally astounding, but the projection systems were like, we think he might be a league average hitter. And that's totally in the exact same range that Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos are in right now, too, which breeds healthy competition. I think that would be a nice thing for all three of those guys to get on the field together and see who's going to win this. Now you lose one leg of that, and you kind of want some more insurance. But you mentioned the fact that maybe he comes back towards the end of the year. I really just hope that, as young as Ryan Mauricio still is right now, that there's no rush. We saw the lingering effect,
of course,
of an ACL tear turn Ronald Acuna Jr. from being one of the best players in baseball to kind of mid to then, once he got over, exactly the best player in baseball again, just from the lingering effects over like a year out from that injury. We saw Royce Lewis rush back from his ACL tear and hurt it again and miss a whole nother year. It became one of the most electric players in baseball in the second half this year. And like, they lost a whole year of that because he tried to come back too fast because there was pressure on him. That was different because he was number one overall pick and there was a lot more going on with him years over years. But especially Mauricio, who's still 22 years old, Ryan Mauricio is only 4 months older than Kevin Prada, the Mets' first-round pick in the most recent draft. He's younger than Brandon Sproat, the Mets' second-round pick in the most recent draft. Like, yeah. He's so young still in baseball. And there's half our double-A roster is older than Ryan Mauricio still right now. And Ryan Mauricio, like you said, already hit the ball 170 miles an hour in the league. Just take the slow road with him now. Like, his physical tools are so amazing, and that's kind of what he's built on. So to take some of that physical ability away, I think would be a disservice to him. And then to put pressure on him to try and play when he's not 100%, that definitely wears you down over time. That hurts development. So just, we still have internal options, but maybe this now means that there does have to be a better look at their infield depth.
Yeah, I mean, taking a look at what is available on the market, because infield depth will always help this team. You could always use more. I know the Mets have gotten Jose Iglesias, and they got Zach Short in the past. And who's the other name that I'm missing?
Joey Wendell,
of course. But like, maybe there's some guys at third base more specifically. I know I've mentioned it before, and I know if John ever listens to this podcast again, we'll find out. But I'd been talking about Gio Urshela with you, like one of the first episodes of the offseason. I'm like, Gio Urshela feels like a really good fit for a guy who can play third base. He could play shortstop. I don't really want him to, obviously, but he could play shortstop, could play first base, and has played in New York, has had success, seems to be good buddies with Francisco Lindor, seen him on his Instagram stories a couple times. Like, feels like a good fit of a major leaguer who's not going to demand everyday playing time, who could swap in and out with Brett Beatty, who could provide a defensive option at third base, maybe in a later inning of a game where Brett Beatty's starting or whatever it's going to be. Or if Mark Vientos is playing, he fills in defensively for him. And still gives you a league average to slightly above league average bat as well.
Totally. And if you want to think of players who would even just work really well as platoon for potentially Brett Beatty, it's a guy like Justin Turner who'd cost more money but has just forever in his entire career annihilated lefties, hit them to bits and pieces. And even a much cheaper option, these are literally one-year stopgaps, is Evan Longoria, who, again, just demolishes lefties and still last year proved on a Diamondbacks team that won the National League, can still play a competent third base and like be a great like resounding force in the locker room to keep things on track. Even, I mean, like a reunion with Eduardo Escobar isn't even a crazy thing to think about. It's like getting more major league hitters in this Mets. Like, we saw this team struggle with depth last couple of years, and like signing more major league players to like fill in this roster is not a bad thing. Like, there's plenty of outfielders that are also very interesting to the Mets, probably. Like Michael Brantley, David Peralta, Jack Peterson. Like, I've talked a lot about Michael Taylor in this podcast. I think he'd be a great option as someone who can play defense center field really well. Harrison Bader's out there. He'll likely be not very expensive. Like, there's just, we haven't
got
even
one for
to,
you.
What?
Hunter Dozier is an interesting one. I know he's been not great the last couple of years, but a few years ago, he was putting up some crazy numbers and had like the barrel rates and the exit velos that match. And he can play third base, first base, and the two corner outfield positions as well. So if you want someone who can give you like a lot of options, who will be, he's going to be free. I don't think anyone's knocking on the door of Hunter Dozier per se, but like a guy who had success at some point, maybe you get him to a smart team like the Mets. Like, ooh, look at this. Now he's hitting well again.
Another guy who's an infielder, outfielder, who you hate him, but like Jurickson Profar, at least can do a lot of different things defensively with a glove. Like, he can stand a lot of different places. You won't feel that bad about it. But the point we're trying to make is that this offseason really has not even started yet. And lots of Mets fans left and right are being very scared about what's been going on with the offseason so far. It leads to a lot of humor. We talked about this last episode, but every single time the Mets Twitter account makes a move official, like, people are just flooding the comment section. I can't even imagine that other teams get this kind of engagement on a move like Tyler Colaway signing a minor league contract, like a guy who's going to be great right field depth, where it's like everyone's like, oh my God, Stearns masterclass. Like, some people though are like totally serious and they think like this guy is totally falling, but it's definitely not really true. It's very funny, but we have only just begun. This is not even happening yet.
Like, the top guy at every position basically hasn't signed. So like, whatever hole it is that you think the Mets have, or even if you're a fan of another team, whatever hole you think your team has, it's like they're all still available. Literally every single position, the top guy is still available outside of Shohei Ohtani. That's it. That's the whole jux of this offseason, is just getting started. There's so much going on, and I think the Mets are still going to be making quite a few moves. I like that we're getting active in like those nooks and crannies, something that we've talked about that would be great to see them capitalize on in the past. Now we can maybe put our focus towards some bigger players to fill in some of those holes rather than the nooks and crannies.
Totally. Bullpen depth, something that we're both obsessed with. Doing that, like, hitting the parts of the market that we know are able to be hit right now while still making sure that hopefully you're in play for the things you really want to be in play for.
Give me a weird reliever you've been looking into recently. I know you've got one that you're weird, like, reliever, what about who can we give a flyer to that I'd be so interested and happy to have?
Someone I think would be fun, but I don't know about how much he'd get because of how good he was last year. I think it's probably Chris Stratton as a really weird one.
Okay.
Weird one, because he comes out of the bullpen with a lot of the pitches. The curveball's the best one. It's just like there's strange stuff in there, but like he finds a way to get it done. Just has like a deeper arsenal than most relievers you're going to end up signing, even at this juncture of the offseason. Even a reliever who just signed, who I would have loved for the Mets being made a play for, but seems like he's just totally dead set where he's been his whole career. Joe Kelly had an amazing video, if you saw him and his wife, I think on Instagram or TikTok today, about him changing his number so Shohei can keep his number. And just like going through like every single shirt they had of his with his number 17 on it. And then like at the end of it, she took a blue Sharpie marker or a 99 in the back of his white t-shirt. And he was like, all right, thank you. So it's funny stuff that.
Cool.
But even like, I don't know, like I know John, shout out to him. He wants Ryan Stanek. Ryan Stanek throws a great fastball. A fastball, like those his fastball properties you're not getting for the as cheaply as you can sign him usually. There's a lot of just my guy Magic Wandy as a wild lefty out of the bullpen with some weird stuff. Like having weird lefties. And David Stearns has talked about the fact that we do want to have guys with different looks and different stuffs out of the bullpen. We do want velocity, but it's not the be all and end all. We like some funkiness. We like some arm slots. We like some release points. We like lefty. We like righty. We want everything. It's all possible. Our guy Shintaro Fujinami is still out there. Like, who knows what is going to happen to him in his major league career, but he throws 100 miles an hour. Like, it does not grow it doesn't grow on trees. It just simply doesn't. Like, there's still a lot of fun to be had with this this reliever market, especially. And even just all the position players. There's so many players still free agents. Matt Chapman, no word on him. Cody Bellinger, no word on him. Like, there's nothing going on. It's dead silence right now across the league.
Yep, dead silent. And of course, if anything happens, you know, we are going to talk to you guys all about it. I think it's a good place for us to wrap up this episode of the Mets Up Podcast. Big 250, we appreciate you. We're due for an in-person episode whenever James gets back from Portugal or whatnot. We'll figure one out. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for watching all 250 episodes of the Mets Up Podcast. We appreciate you. Follow us on our social media at Mets Up on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Go subscribe to the New York Mets YouTube channel if you want to see the video version of this. And if you're listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Odyssey, drop us a rating, drop us a review, download and subscribe. Follow James on Twitter at
James_Shiano.
And me at GiraffeNeckMark with a C. Thank you guys for listening and watching all 250. And we'll catch you on the next episode. Peace.
See you guys next time.